From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love, and we're doing that by building the Backyard Advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And we started this show to inspire people, to connect people, to educate people, and today on our show, we're going to have some of that. I think there's going to be maybe a little bit more inspiration than normal. I think if there's one thing that separates winners from the rest of us is the strength to keep going, the strength to persevere, the determination, the toughness, the courage. And despite the odds, despite the pain, they continue to go on. And today on the show, we're going to have Jason Salinas. I want to welcome you, Jason, to the show. I've been wanting to have you on the show for a long time, knowing you had a really cool story. But we were prompted by our mutual friend, Jason Bartlett. So that's cool. You are here, finally, after all these years.
Yes.
So I appreciate you you coming on the show.
Glad to be here, for
maybe,
sure.
So you're an entrepreneur, but you're more than that. Let's start off with a little bit of entrepreneurial talk, if you will. You've had this 20 years in business as a fitness guy and as a professional athlete, professional bodybuilder. So maybe tell us about that business and that little bit of that background and journey.
Okay. Well, you know, I was always into working out. I played sports in high school. And it was important to me to take care of my body. You know, you'd have those kids that would go in the weight room, spend the minimal time in there, and they were out of there. And any chance I could get when I was in high school, I was in the gym. And so my very first job out of high school, I got working at a little family-owned gym right across the street from Sierra College while I was playing football there. And still didn't really know what I wanted to do. I just knew I loved the gym. And I would sit from 5 a.m. until 9 a.m. when no one was really there and watch the early morning people work out. I was so intrigued at all the different styles of training. And really just, I tell people, that's probably where I learned the most out of all the certifications and all the courses, really just studying the different styles of workouts and realizing that there's so many different styles that fit individual needs. And I still wasn't really sure what my path was going to school. I knew I always wanted to help people. I always enjoyed working with people. I was actually a peer helper in high school. Went through a little trauma when I was younger, and I had psychiatrists and counselors that worked with me, and it did a lot for me. So I always kind of thought maybe that's the path that I want to go. But I made the mistake of taking my first psychology class one night a week, 3 hours after football practice. And it literally flew over my head. I think I probably went to half the classes and actually ended up failing that class. I said, man, I got to find a different avenue in order to work with people. And so while working at the gym, I got tired of sitting at the front desk. So I said, hey, do you mind if I do orientation, show people how to work on the equipment when they sign up? So I kind of created this little position. And I'd say probably 2-3 weeks in, this family came in with their daughter. I was probably 19 at the time. The girl was probably 14. I think she probably had a little crush on me. But she says, is he a trainer? Can he train me? So they said, do you train? I go, well, yeah, I do. I wasn't even certified. But they got some sessions and I started training this girl. And very shortly after that, I started dating, you probably know Jim Floor. Andrew Floor's sister, Megan
Jim
Floor.
Jim Floor was one of the first guests on our show. And I knew Andrew Floor at some level because he was a good football, really
great
good football player
yep.
as well. But I want to stop for just a second here because there's a lesson in there for anybody out there that's got their first job. If you see something that you think you can add value in, like orientation or, you know, don't be afraid to step up and create yourself your own position. So anyway, continue with your stories.
Shortly after that, Megan, obviously we started dating, and her parents, they have this beautiful 3-car garage gym converted into a gym for Andrew. He was middle school getting ready for high school at that time, had a personal trainer that came to the house, trained the family. He got hurt. And so they said, hey, isn't your boyfriend a trainer? Can't he come and train us?
Oh, wow.
So next thing you know, I go out there, I sit
with... Was that Brian Graham?
I'm not mentioning any names.
Oh, okay. Oh, shoot. Okay.
No, I think it was. Yeah,
okay.
It was. Yeah.
I went to high school with him.
Okay.
So, yeah,
did you ever hear about the story that happened with that?
I heard it, but I don't know it.
Yeah, and he got injured. What is even that?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So next thing you know, they said, hey, you know, are you willing to come and train us at the house? I said, sure. So we sat down and we talked. And what I can remember about that point in time is he was a bodybuilder, a professional or amateur bodybuilder, but he was really hardcore in it. And I think the style of training was more like bodybuilding training for this couple. And so they were a little bit older at that time. They looked good, but I think the push of the heavy weights, they were getting injured. They couldn't create any consistency. They couldn't create any results. Here I came in, and with what knowledge I had learned in this short time studying these different style of workouts, said, hey, this is what we need to do for you guys. We need to do high pace, you know, movements, you know, good form technique, constantly changing workouts up. And in 2 months, they'd gotten better results than they had seen in 2 years. Now, you know, they were at that time, they were selling out Arco Arena, Anaheim Stadium, 15, 17,000 people as the main speaker. So all of a sudden now they're showing up at these events and people are like, oh my God, what are you doing? And they said, we got a new trainer.
Right.
And so next thing you know, all the local Granite Bay Diamonds that were underneath them were, can he train us at your house? So next thing you know, I've got a schedule.
Yeah, he was big in Amway.
I've got a schedule. I'm training probably, you know, 10 to 12 people twice to three times a week. And so I kind of created my own personal training business right here.
Sweet.
And so still wasn't really sure if that's what I wanted to do. I was kind of, you know, being young, having fun, running around with Jason Bartlett at that time, doing a little bit of everything. And I remember, but I was always a hustler. I mean, I tell people, you know, when we talk about, I got out, the minute I turned 18, I moved out. I was working two jobs. I got a job at 5 a.m. there. And then I went and did a temp student job for the state. And I always was just trying to hustle and grind. And so I never was depending on anybody for anything. And so during this transition of training these clients, not really sure if that was kind of the mark for me. I was still kind of going to school at Sierra. I said I was on the 5-year plan at Sierra College. And I had a defining moment. I had an apartment fire and lost everything in my apartment. I was too prideful to move home. And so that's what really kind of kicked me into a gear where I was like, okay, I got to get serious and figure out what I want to do. And so I had, at the time, had transitioned and started working for 24 Hour Fitness, a big corporation. And was really enjoying that, but there wasn't consistency. I'd have 1 month where I was there, next month I'm kind of running around. And they came to me a couple of times. They said, hey, you have the potential to be a manager, but you got to be more consistent. So I was like, hey guys, I'm ready. You want me to work weekends, whatever it is, I'll do it. I want to get that position. I always liked cutting my buddy's hair too. So I thought I wanted to be a hairstylist. So I'd enrolled, I'd got into Sac State, but it wasn't starting until the fall. And I also enrolled in cosmetology school. I said, whatever one comes first is where I'm going to put that energy. And so they came to me about a month later and said, hey, we're going to have you be basically the fitness manager in charge of the trainers of 24 Hour Fitness, the brand new one opening up right by the Auto Mall. So I said, let's do it. It was, you know, you go from making maybe $20,000 a year to $65,000 my first year at 19 years old. I was like, okay, I'm ready for this thing. And so
then that's good money. But at that time, that was a lot of money.
That's a lot of money at that time. You know, I'd always depended on having a roommate or two. Now is for the first time, had my own apartment, had no debt, went and bought my first car.
That'd be like making 120 grand a year now or something.
It felt like it. Yes, for sure. And so, but when I did that, they said, guess what? Here's the thing though. You can't train clients anymore. You now got to train the trainers to do what you've been doing to be successful in these last couple of years. And so it was kind of a new thing for me to adapt to. I really enjoy both. I enjoy obviously training clients, but I also like working with people who are looking at owning their own business and becoming their own trainer and teaching them all the insights to be successful. So it's kind of something I really enjoy. And I think at that time, because I had such a big pool of trainers coming to the big gym, was a lot easier. Now I find it harder to really find somebody who's as passionate about training as I am, that's willing to invest the time. I'm saying, hey, you come and shadow with me. The sooner and the more time you invest, the faster I'll get you to where you need to be. They start and then they fall off. It's the craziest thing. So if there was a struggle, I'm still learning on how to attract that, I think, right now for me.
Well, 20 years in business, and you mentioned that, you know, watching some of these athletes work out when you're in your first job. But fitness has changed a little bit. I was over there. You invited me. I wanted you to come on the show. You said, why don't you come over and work out? And I'll admit I was very intimidated. Went over there and you were gentle with me, took it nice and easy. I went with the lightweights. But the workout that you put us through, it was kind of like circuit training. You didn't get a lot of rest in between. You picked four exercises and we bounced from circuit to circuit. And we went through those four exercises four times and then we changed to another set of exercises and that continued for a while until I was exhausted and I had to quit.
Yes.
But is that the traditional workout that you would put a you know, a middle-aged man or an old man through or a middle-aged man? Because there were some other guys working out with us.
Yeah. So to be honest with you, I would start anybody with a full body workout. Okay. Now, when we were younger, you know, you kind of got, you jumped right into the splits, chest and tries, back and buys, mm-hmm. legs, shoulders. And I did that for years. And even when I did that style of workout or when I go back to it now, I still put things together. Now, you said circuit training. I've had people go, oh, we're doing circuit training. I always like to say we're doing mass supersetting.
Yeah.
To me, circuit training is you're going to be on station one, I'm going to be on station two, we're going to go for 30 seconds or a minute, and then we'll rotate. This, you're still pushing 12 to 15 reps, and then you can actually increase the set once you get used to the conditioning of the set. And I start everybody off slow, not just you, but anybody, because I don't want to be that trainer. And for guys, it takes a lot for them to come in and work out with a male trainer and not think they're going to try to bury them and put mm-hmm. themselves here. So I tell everybody, start out slow. I usually will tell them, hey, you did four sets. You did our exact workout. But I would even tell somebody new, just do two.
Okay.
I got two big guys I just started with. I mean, if you've seen them, you would think these are your big guys in the gym, and they started my workouts and they barely were doing two rounds.
Yeah.
And then they were in the bathroom throwing up.
Oh, wow.
They're used to powerlifting. They're used to heavy. They're not used to that conditioning.
You don't allow for, you know, I don't want to say allow. There didn't feel like the time to rest in between. I was trying to keep up with you and the other two guys that were working out with us. And it's like, well, we're not resting. And so I'm kind of curious about that too, because I find I do a little CrossFit, a little yoga, and I find that I can get sore, or like if I superset, like for somebody just listening, superset, as I understand it, is, let's say, I'll do this sometimes. You do a set of bench, maybe you do 10, 12 reps, whatever feels pretty hard for you. And then afterwards, go down and do 20 push-ups. Perfect. And that way you kind of superset the chest a little bit.
Yep.
And if you do that three or four times, you can get sore. Yes. And I wonder why. Is that because you're already tired and you're already breathing hard, and then you just lighten it up almost like a drop set, and then, but you're still kind of breathing hard, or you know, your heart rate's up, and then you push it again for another whatever 45, 60 seconds.
Pushing the muscles past its normal fatigue stage.
Okay.
So it's that shock, right? You think you're just done. You just did 8 to 12 reps of bench, and now you're going to go into your body weight for 8 to 10 push-ups just till failure. So it's kind of that exact same concept that you just said. But what I like about it is, you know, I train clients that way because two things. One, when they come in, it allows them to target everything as a whole without so much emphasis in one muscle group that they're so sore they can't come back. Somebody just starts with you and I go, okay, today we're doing just chest and tries, and I have to fill 45 minutes to an hour of chest and tries. They're not going to be able to move even if I went lightweight with them. So I like to just do a little bit. Then there's the typical guys, majority of them, that don't like to do legs. So now you're forcing them to incorporate, you know.
Why is that? Because they want to look good. They want to look, have the big arms and all that.
They generally want what's seen the most to look the biggest. So chest and arms, right? You wear a shirt, you look tight in your chest.
Yeah, but you know, if you want to have your pants look right, you got to do some squats, right?
And you know that if you don't do legs and you go to do legs, it hurts really bad.
Yeah.
So then that deters them from going, I'm not doing legs, you know, for a while again. But by doing the full body, just puts a couple sets in there, get a nice little pump. And it's funny because for guys, I go, wow, I've actually started to see some shape in my legs. Mm-hmm. And now I'm past that soreness that I would have normally got just doing legs in an hour. And now they're wanting to incorporate it in their regular regimen more.
You know, the other thing I heard from watching YouTube is that from a testosterone standpoint, if you do heavy legs, be good for guys to have it release testosterone.
Yeah, yeah, that's your largest muscle group, 100%. Yeah.
Okay, so that's true. Okay, so in terms of, I have my wife's, so this is going to be, excuse me, we'll get into this in a little bit, but my wife is Jason's mom's cousin. So I think that makes you like a second cousin. So you and I've actually known you since you were probably 13 or 14 years old. We used to kind of converge at Anna Stell's house.
Yep.
That'd be your grandmother, right? Grandma. Your grandma's house for Easter, and it'd be 100 plus people all playing horseshoes and having a good time and so on. So I've known you, but I didn't know you very well. And maybe I still don't as much. So getting to know you a little bit better. But I do have a question that my wife Stacy wanted me to ask. She wanted to ask, like, because you've aged well, right? I think you're probably 8 or 9 years younger than her, but you know, you look great and you're in great shape. Are there any like secrets or any like, is there any, I don't know, tricks that you use that maybe most people wouldn't think of?
I use them all. I use them all. You know, people ask all the time, like, well, how do you stay in shape? The biggest motivator for me is this is my job. It is my job. I've gotten to this point. I've been successful, you know, 20 years in the business. But when you hire somebody and you're going to pay them a good amount of money to transform your life, they better look how you want to look. And so I've just always had that mentality where it's like, I can't miss working out. I can't miss eating good 70 to 80% of the time. And I enjoy going out eating and doing regular, but I've built myself up to a point where I can get away with things that the average person can't because they're not where I am now. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. But that's probably the biggest thing is just that motivation, knowing, you know, people go, well, I work, it's hard to get gym. I understand all that. In my entire life, I've worked in a gym. So there's never been an excuse. Can't get my workout in. I can't get my cardio in. I'm there all day. So sometimes people go, man, I was just working. And I have to understand that their lifestyle is not the same as mine. I've been in the gym 20 plus years, almost every day. But when it comes to, you know, getting hair transplant, when it comes to getting Botox, anytime I can get in there and work with somebody, you know, being somebody in this area, a lot of companies will reach out and say, hey, you know, I know you got a huge following. I know you got a lot of people to support you. And I do a good job too of hyping it up, but get me in, you know, and say, I want, like, you know, I kind of came to terms with, I'm buzzing my head, I'm shaving it down, you know? Mm-hmm. And so my friend had worked with this local hair restoration guy in Granite Bay, just started his practice. And so that, like, I just wanted to come meet him, you know, and check him out. Great guy, has been a physician in Yuba City for years, but decided hair is kind of his passion, you know? And so we got talking, his office kind of looked like it was thrown together. And so I said, man, this hair restoration is a bougie procedure. You got to get this place dialed in. You need some white couches in here, some fur rug. I mean, you got to get it sharp, you know? And so just after talking with him, he's like, I really enjoyed the time with that guy. I want him to be the face of the company. I want to do this hair for free.
Wow.
So went in there, had the hair procedure done. And so, you know, just things like that. I network really well with people, but, you know, I'll have somebody go, hey, you know, would love to post a video you getting your Botox. I have no shame in that. A lot of guys mm-hmm. don't want, you know, that to be seen. For me, if it makes me look younger and feel younger, I'm going to do it. So
yeah. Well, you're in the business of helping people look and feel good.
And we all kind of work together, you know? And so, yeah, there's definitely a lot of tricks, and any one of I can find, I'm doing it. You know what I mean?
So when people come in, so a few of my buddies, I know Jason works out over there, Tori works out over there, a few others, and I knew one of the guys that you were working out with the day I was over there. So I probably know a few more people that work out at your gym, but people transform. I mean, when they come in, they might be, talk to me about that transformation that's your goal or their goal typically.
So for me personally, that's what I consider myself, somebody who specializes in transformations. And at a very young part of my career, when I started at 24 Hour Fitness, I had been training. I'd been training the floors already. I'd been working in that small gym. I thought I knew nutrition and training. And it wasn't until I got hired on at 24 Hour, which at the time, 1997, was very credible for their trainers. And Folsom had the best staff. I mean, these guys, there was probably 10 trainers there, multiple degrees, national certifications, just very knowledgeable trainers. But at the time, when you signed up, they had the trainers and they had a nutrition tech who worked under a licensed software program. And so they said, you know, when people are signing up, they're getting conflicting information with two different people, or they're getting one service but not the other. They're not really getting results. And working for 24 Hour or in a big corporate gym like that, it's not really about the results, it's about sales. How much personal training can you sell? And so they're constantly on you. You're a hero 1 month if you have a big month, and a zero next month, any sales position. And so they're constantly, you know, the highs and the lows of the sales, not really worried about the results. But one thing that was very fortunate for me is when I came in, they go, we're going to do away with these nutrition techs, and we're going to send the trainers to school and teach them the same software program and make them become the nutrition tech. And once that happened for me, the light came on and I was like, man, I've been doing this all wrong. What I thought was healthy wasn't healthy. I thought carrot cake was healthy because it had carrots in it. I mean, I'm just kidding. But that's kind of the knowledge that some people have. And, you know, I thought chicken breast that was cut up in a package in the deli section, I could have that. Well, no, it's processed. There's a ton of sodium in there, you know, additives, preservatives. It's not the same as you cooking your own and knowing exactly what's mm-hmm. in it. So I remember I said, I took this lady, we're still friends today. She was 5'2", 240 pounds, over 40% body fat. That's as big as the calipers, the pinchers that we would get. I trained her for 4 years, but about 2 years, she started making some noise. But over the 4 years, she got down to 117 pounds.
Okay, 15, for 5'2", that's 15, about right.
15% body fat.
Nice.
No surgery. Her skin was as tight as a 20-year-old.
Wow.
And it was just teaching her to eat whole food. We started slow, built up. But like I said, 2 years in, they're like, people were calling, going, you're amazing, you're inspiring, you should be a trainer. They posted her picture up.
That's life changing.
In all the 24 hours, and my little little picture was in the corner. Next thing you know, people are like, I want to train with him. I want to train with him. And I was like, ooh, this is the ticket. If I can transform people, I don't got to sell anything. They're going to come to me. And so I took that mindset and just really kind of ran with it, put a program together. And at that time, do you remember Bill Phillips, Body for Life?
I don't.
It was a transformation contest, probably in the early or late 90s, early 2000s. He wrote a book, Eating for Life. Mm. He had the supplement company EAS.
Okay.
Yeah. So he based it all around a 12-week transformation. So a lot of the same principles I kind of copied. Some of his stuff was a little bit extreme for beginners, but I took kind of the same principle. You know, 6 days on, start them out with one free day. Start them out with basically a breakfast, lunch, and a dinner, a couple snacks in there, and then gradually build up the progressions of their workouts, and then meet with them once a week, not once a month or once every 2 months, but once a week to check in and see how their stats are going so the coaching can come in. So I took that model and was very successful with it. Next thing you know, I started doing these 90-day transformations. When I went to manage the Roseville 24-hour and they said, you can't train clients anymore, that's when I said, okay, I got to teach these guys to do exactly what I'm doing. And I said, if you don't want people to come in and train with me, you got to get your clients before and after pictures up here. So they go, who trained that person? That's who I want to train with. Next thing you know, you'd walk in that gym and we had a wall of before and afters that were all the trainers. And so we were the first gym to do 100,000 in personal training revenue. So,
wow.
Yeah, that was 2000.
Yeah. So your office is in Roseville and it's 20 years. And you and I were talking at the end of the workout. It hasn't necessarily all been wine and roses. It hasn't been like straight uphill and to the right, right? It's, yeah. You've had your ups and downs.
Yeah.
Maybe share with us a big win story that came after, you know, that required some of that perseverance that we talked about at the beginning of the show.
Yeah. Well, you know, what happened with 24 hours, some people, well, what made you leave there if it was so good? I rode that ride for probably 3 or 4 years, got up to where I think my third or fourth year was about 87,000. And once again, at 22, that's a lot. So then there had always been a position called area director of fitness, where now you go around, train the managers and trainers in the area. So I kept shooting for that. You know, bring this position back. I started hosting meetings once a month, bringing the local gyms to my gym. We'd have a motivational speaker in. We'd give out awards, not just for sales, but for who've gotten results, t-shirts, get everybody fired up. And I was basically creating that just without the pay. And this one manager kept going, well, we need to see what you can do at another club. I said, basically started this one with all the systems from ground up. It's the number one club. Anywhere I go, I'm going to take a pay cut. Why would I do that? So after just kind of going through, riding the motions, I show up one day and they go, you're going to downtown. And I'm like, downtown? Already I'm taking a pay cut. They're doing less revenue than us. I have to go down there. I just said, you know what? Put your head down and go to work. Show them what you can do. So I go downtown. I'm commuting from Lincoln every day now. I have to fire the entire staff because they're all training under the table. Rebuilt the staff up, doubled the revenue in 1 year from what they were doing. And they go, they just did they're doing a compensation cut to all the management. So I said, I want to go back to Roseville. So they said, nope, you can't. Only way you can go back to Roseville is you step down and become a trainer again. So talk about swallowing your pride. I said, that's what I'll do. So I literally had to go back to the gym that I created with all the staff that I had built that made the number one gym. And now I'm just an average trainer amongst the trainers that I hired. Wow. With some guy managing me that doesn't know anything. So I just went, just buckled down, built my clientele, slowly started working them out of there. And it took me about probably 8 months till I got, you know, full load out of there. And a trainer who once trained for me had opened his own little gym, tiny little spot, maybe 1,000 square foot. I said, hey, can I come and train at your gym? He says, all right. I didn't really know what to pay. So I was paying him $10 a session. So at almost 40 hours a week, I was paying him almost $1,600 a month rent. I mean, that's pretty crazy even back then to think now what I would charge somebody. Yeah. So I was probably paying him more than he was making training. So I did that for about a year. And in the meantime, before I went to downtown, I purchased a home. So I said, I'm going to refinance. I'm open my own gym. I'm just going to do it. And so reconnected with a buddy of mine. And so we had opened S&B Elite. This is economy's booming, 2003, 2004. And I mean, it's funny to think we just kind of just jumped into this thing, had no fear, jumped right in. And within first 3-4 months, we were doing more than 24-hour 40,000 square foot Roseville was doing out of a 2,600 square foot office facility in Rockland. We had about 10 of our trainers that followed over and we're just killing it, you know. Yeah. Really overexpanded, you know, probably did some things that we probably shouldn't have done. And then all of a sudden you start to see the change in the economy. And so, you know, we start to look and go, man, we're just feeding these clients, but they're not retaining them. They're not bringing anybody new in. And so it was kind of like, hey, we're gonna take them and start training them ourselves again. Cause we got to where we were hardly even training. And so Some things happened with my partner and I. It wasn't necessarily with me. It was who had financially backed him. They were like, hey, you know, where's our investment on our loan? And so he decided to leave. SMB was kind of taking its toll. in a downward spiral. And I was like, man, what am I going to do? I still got a handful of trainers here that I want to feed, but are we going to be able to stay here? Our rent was $16,000 a month in Rockland during that time for 2,600 square feet.
Whoa.
We had some shady stuff done on our lease that our landlord wasn't willing to fix. And so I was like, we're not going to pay anymore. We'll have to go somewhere else. So I had a good friend and client. I'll never forget this. This was a turning point for me, and I'm so grateful for them. But I can remember them saying, hey, we'll help get a building for you. You know, we know you're not gonna be able to hear. Let's look around. So we start looking around and we find something over by Rockland High School. It's 1,000 square foot. I'm as excited as I could be. Looking back, I'd have never fit in 1,000 square foot, but I was excited. Him and I go to lunch afterwards. And literally, I got a week and a half when we're supposed to be out of the gym. And we go into this, it's like a Chinese restaurant or something. And we get done eating. I'm all excited. And I get a fortune cookie. And the fortune cookie says, don't do what you can't do on your own. Mm. And I look up at this guy and I'm like, they can't help me. They can't help me. I can't have them help me. So it was a Friday. So I don't say anything to him. So I go back to the gym, get on, what was it? Not Marketplace, but freaking, what's the thing where we used to look for deals online and real estate?
Craigslist.
Yes, Craigslist. I get on Craigslist and I find the location where I'm at now. And it's first and last, no credit check. I mean, I got the cash. I go over there right there, peeking in the window, and it's a bunch of cubbies. It must have been a mortgage office, and it was like boiler room. They just scattered out of there. But I could just see the vision of that box. So I call. I said, hey, I'll take. They're like, well, the owner's not in until Tuesday. I got to be out of my place at Wednesday. I'll be there Tuesday. So I show up, and he's just real lackadaisical, taking me through. I said, I want this place. How fast can you get these cubbies out of here? Here's the cash. So literally a couple buddies who moved over. And so that was because I thought literally I was going to lose everything at that point in time, yeah. You know, from having this high to a low. And we get in there. And then it's just grinding it out, you know. By that point now, I'm starting to go through this divorce, but I at least got my own place, you know. Yeah. And so just the momentum kind of slowly started building up. Energy started changing. Things kind of got bigger and bigger. And my model kind of changed with time. You know, I'd always been a big believer in one-on-one. You know, at that time, early 2000s, there was a lot of big group trainings. And what I feel is when you do group trainings of more than 5 to 10, or I would say more than 5, the personal gets thrown out the window. And so where you can really get in and dig in, ask people, what are you eating? What are you doing? Can I help you? That coaching goes away. You might get a good workout, but you're not seeing a lot of transformations done that way. So I don't do it. I do one-on-one. But I got so busy that I said, you know what? I'm going to try something. I'm going to try to see if clients would be open to pairing together. So instantly I was able to double my clientele and double my income by putting people together, keeping the session rate down a little bit lower. And so then I said, you know what? I always had a vision of taking my small gym and making it a private 24 access gym where now people can come in, you know, have a super clean gym. Mm-hmm. If they're not training with me, they'll see what's going on and maybe they'll want to train. If they've trained with me long enough and they're like, man, I can't do this anymore, but I don't want to leave this environment. It's really, you know, a family-like environment. They can switch over to the membership and still be there and still feel like they've got that connection.
Well, I have been over there. It's super nice. It's over in Roseville, kind of not too far from where I had my paper route as a kid. In fact, right there. And it's a really nice gym. What is it, about 4,000 square feet?
3,600
square feet. Yep. And it's right there near the freeway, so no matter where you're coming from, it's pretty easy to get there. It's I guess it'd be the Riverside exit off Melody Lane or on Melody Lane. I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit. I want to maybe go a little bit deeper here. As I mentioned earlier, I've known you for a long time, and I never really knew your story. I'm one of these, you know, so I married into your family, basically, is what happened. And so your mom, your mom is my, your grandma is my mother-in-law's sister, right? Yeah, so yeah. I knew you, but I didn't know you, but I knew that there had been maybe some trouble in your family or with you potentially, but I never really knew it. I asked my wife Stacy; she didn't seem to know the story. And recently, you had sent me a video that had you talking to the Sacramento Children's Home, and that's when sort of the light bulb went off for me. And so maybe tell the story if you don't mind. You've started a charity more recently, Kicks for Kids, and you give out shoes to deserving children, underprivileged kids. And but you lied when you were 8, and that led to probably a lot of this hustler, scrappiness, perseverance type of person that you are, I have to imagine it did. Something happened when you were about eight, and that had to just like shape everything differently.
Yeah, you know, so my mom and dad, they divorced when I was real young. From what I've heard, they had a amicable early relationship. My dad then remarried. I was probably around three or four, and he actually got full custody of me. And so living with him full time, I saw my mom every other weekend. This relationship with my dad and his new wife started out real nice, and then it kind of grew into something that was a little different. It was almost two-sided. When he was home, everything was great. Dinner was made. There was helping with homework. When he was gone, he was a firefighter, so he worked 24-hour shifts, one day on, one day off. When he was gone, this stepmother of mine was just a different person. Mm-hmm. Took out a lot of her anger from me being from something else on me. Was very abusive physically, mentally. I mean, did a lot of different weird things. Yeah. I mean, from making me eat certain foods at night, I couldn't leave till the dinner table was gone. Right, you know, I wouldn't be able to go to sleep. Gizzards and Brussels. I mean, just weird things.
You're
I look back.
Kid.
I was a kid, yes. And so, you know, I can remember sitting there at midnight, bobbing my head at the table. I'd finally shove it in my pajama pants and then go to the bathroom and throw it out. And I'd eat it all at night. I mean, just different little mental things. And no one really ever knew of the abuse. I never said anything when I came to my mom's house. I'm sure my grandma, being as in tune as she was, always thought something. She just didn't want to push me, you know. How are you? Are you okay? And I know, as I'm older now and I look back, looking into her eyes, she knew something was going on. She just wasn't, you know, going to push on it. And so this went on for a couple years, and it got to a point where I showed up one night home from visitation. Actually, my grandma dropped me off. Her and my stepmom kind of got in a little altercation because we were just a little bit late, and I remember them screaming back and forth at each other. And I went in the house, and she says, go get the mop. And back then, the mops that you would clean floors with were heavy duty. They're not real light like they are now, and they have the squeegee on the bottom.
Oh yeah.
And so I remember hit me with that, you know, probably 10, 15 times. She said, go get your belt. And I had a leather belt like the firemen's wore with about a 2-pound fire engine belt buckle. Hit me with that probably 10, 15 times, and my dad happened to call. She says, you need to come home. Jason's been beaten real bad by his mom and grandma. So now in the next 20 minutes had concocted this whole story of what had happened to me. So they took me to the hospital. Police came, interviewed me at the hospital, sent me home with my dad and my stepmom. And then of course the next day they said, hey, you know, we want to bring you back down for some more questioning. In the meantime, they'd already had my mom, grandma, grandpa interviewed on lie detector tests, and they knew that they didn't do it. So we go to the police station. They say, hey, we want to talk to you about it. You know, tell us the truth. I was still going with the same story. Being a 7-year-old kid, you're scared. You don't, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to change your story.
You don't want to change your story. Yeah. So they say, we're going to take you somewhere safe. And so they take me out the back door, put me in a vehicle, and they drive me to the Sacramento Children's Receiving Home.
Sacramento Children's Receiving Home.
Right there on Watt Avenue. Yeah. Uh-huh. So you show up. And as I'm older now, I look back when I try to describe to people that first day going in there, it almost reminds you of somebody checking into jail. You know, you check in, fingerprint you, take your clothes off that you have on, take you into a room, give you a pair of used jeans, socks, underwear, everything's used, take you to your little bunk, and then there you go. Now, most of the kids in the Sacramento Children's Receiving Home are there maybe a week to 2 weeks as they transfer in between foster parents. I was there for 8 months. 8 months. 2 weeks in, I met with a psychiatrist, really got along with him, and it was the first time I was able to open up and tell the truth. I said, hey, this has been going on for a long time. I feel safe in here. My stepmom is the one that's been doing this.
And I felt safer in there.
I felt safe in there.
That's, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Sheesh. And like, I, you know, I got a chance to go back and talk to the kids, and I told them, I said, hey, if there's one thing, you know, if I can share with you, is that at a young age, even right then, I was able to tell people my story. And so by doing that has allowed me to open up and move forward. And so, you know, sometimes people who carry their drama or their trauma with them, it seems to, you know, hold them back from moving forward and achieving what they want to achieve.
So talking about it.
Yeah. And knowing that those people there that are there putting in their time and effort really want to help you. I mean, those guys aren't making no money. They're true people that are passionate about helping, you know, these kids and being there for them. And the sad part is when I went back, it's changed so much now that they can't even hug on these kids. They can't physically touch them. They can't love on them, can't nothing. So these kids are there, you know, maybe hearing it, but not feeling it, you know, even that connection.
They may be having an experience maybe similar to what you may have had or you had, and nobody's even there to give them a hug.
Can't even give them a hug. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. So yeah, you know, after telling the story, they're just like, okay, well, here you have an 8-year-old now who's told two different stories. We're going to keep him in here while we go through the whole court process. So charges were pressed against my stepmother at the time. And here I am at 8 years old, going to court, testifying in front of a jury, standing up, pointing her at him. And it's happened so long ago, but when I think back, it's like crazy to think to be able to experience all that, you know?
Yeah.
And so while I was in there, this kind of leads to the Kicks for Kids story. My mom had said, hey, is there anything I can bring you? You know? And I said, you know, I really would like the new Nike Cortezes. They just came out and they're the white ones with the red swoosh, little blue trim. Forrest Gump wore them in the movie Forrest Gump. And so she brought those to me and literally my eyes lit up the minute I seen her. You know, I don't think I wore them outside for a week, you know, kept the tissue in there, kept them in the box. I mean, just took care of these, but they gave me my own identity to have something brand new when everything else I had was used and my own like kind of style. I have a shoe addiction now that I said was created by that first pair of shoes all the way back then. And so as I got older, I said, hey, I want to do something. I want to create a cause. I want to do something. I want to know that when I leave this earth, I can say, hey, I created a legacy that wasn't just about myself and show my kids, you know, it's about helping other people, you know, as well. And so I said, what if I do start Kicks for Kids and we take them down to the children's receiving home right at Christmas and they have that same feeling as experience. And I'm never the one, I don't really ever like to just ask people for something. So I said, okay, what can I put on the back end of it? So I said, for every pair of shoes you bring down, I'll give you a raffle ticket. And if it happens to be a name brand, because I remember that name brand meant so much to me. And a lot of these kids, one, have never had a pair of new shoes, but have never had a brand name pair of shoes. So I'll give you two raffle tickets. So we'll come down and then we'll raffle them off. When we take them down, and I'll give away 18 sessions of training, which is about $1,200 worth of training. So I don't feel like I'm just asking without giving. And so that has grown. We went from 60 shoes. This is our 10th year from 68 pairs of shoes to almost 300 last year. And wow. It's people get excited every year. I had a guy, Zach Finley came down today, 10 pairs of shoes. Yeah. I mean, it's
Zach,
awesome.
Zach, he's a pest control, owns a successful pest control company, part of the Entrepreneurs Organization.
Yeah.
Now?
Yeah. So it was great to see him come down and you know, it just, like I said, it just gets exciting to just see the ball start rolling, you know?
Wow. That's really cool. And so, if somebody may be listening to this, thinking about that, we, as you walked in today, you can see that we're starting to collect shoes. We've got a few boxes of shoes out there under our Christmas tree that we're going to take over to you. So you can, if you have some shoes, you can bring them here. But if you want to go in on that for that raffle, can they bring them to you?
Yeah,
is that open to the public?
Open to the public, yeah. Okay. Bring them down to SMB Elite, get a raffle ticket. We have some great prizes now. We've got, you know, Mara's Early Toast, Primo's Pizza, Baca's House. We've got some facials. Different clients are like, what can we throw into the raffles? And so everybody, awesome. Everybody wants to donate and just make it so there's even more
brother,
gifts and prizes.
My buddy Brian Bennett, I think, might want to find. They do meals and stuff like that this time of year. I'll see if I can get him involved.
Yeah, awesome.
But then you give away these shoes to the kids at the Sacramento Children's Receiving Home.
Yep. So we go down. First couple of years, we just literally would pull up and then donate the shoes. And I think it was probably the fourth year. They didn't know who we were. No one ever said anything. We just, they're like, oh, it's the same guy again. And it took one lady one time. She goes, I wore some crazy shoes in there. I always go to, like, some Christmassy outfit. I got a velour green suit with a Santa.
By the way,
back.
Hold up your foot here for the camera here. Now that's a Nike what? What
Metcons.
Is that?
These are the Nike Metcons.
Okay, so anybody's watching on YouTube can see that they're. Are they purple?
Yeah, it's like a deep purple. Yeah.
So, okay. So are those like collector's items or those?
You know, I actually started wearing these because I mean, I'll get the Jordans and the collectors and stuff and they look good, but they're not the most comfortable shoe. Mm. This Metcon 5 is actually a workout shoe. Okay. And it's actually my third pair, but they're super comfortable, light, breathable, and it's just a great workout shoe. So of course I'm in the gym all the time. So right now this is my favorite workout shoe, the Metcon 5s.
The Metcon 5s. Okay. Yeah, so I interrupted you. So then the lady, recognize you from years of dropping off shoes.
She goes, wow, those are some crazy shoes. And I go, well, I have a shoe addiction and it started when I was in here. She said, what? Wait a minute. She goes, what'd you say? And so then I end up telling her story. Oh my God, we got to have you back. I want to have you to tell a story. And so then I came in and met with the staff and they've recognized me as alumni from being there. And so it's pretty cool. And I had always wanted to be there and actually hand the shoes out with the kids, but you know, it's pretty private. And they had an incident where a girl had passed away a couple years ago that was in the children's home. She ran, her friend was running away. She was actually going to stop her, got hit by a car on I-80. And so it just brought a lot of turmoil to the Sacramento Children's Receiving Home, a lot of negative, you know, for them not stopping her, but their hands are tied behind their back of what they can do, you know? And so they reached out and they said, hey, can you come down and speak to the staff and the kids here just to kind of build a room around? I was like, I'll be there tomorrow. So the video that you got to see was that was about 3 years ago. And that was the first chance I got to go and speak back. And so it was just such a cool feeling to be able to see the kids and the staff and let the staff know that, man, you guys, you did real good with me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You taught me to be able to open up and talk about, you know, the issues that I was going through. And rather than that, hold me down, be able to grow and move forward with it. So
how important was youth sports and high school sports in your development? I think a lot of times we forget how much that can be an impact. We need those role models. Sometimes even a tough coach can be super helpful. And you obviously were a very, very good athlete and maybe somebody who needed a little bit of a role model or role models in your life, similar to the way Jason Bartlett, our mutual buddy, needed. Was that a part of
people ask, like, you know, who was your male role model? You know, Grandpa Pager. I mean, he worked hard. He provided for the family. He loved my grandma and was a great husband. Would do anything. I mean, I probably learned as much discipline. I mean, I worked a couple summers building houses with him. I hated him 1 minute, loved him the next. But he taught me a lot. He wasn't really physically out teaching me sports. And no one really had to do that. That was just, and I look back now and I go, I just had it. I played soccer, football, baseball, and I was going to be the team captain if it took me one season or next. My goal was I was going to be the leader of every team all the way from junior high, all the way through high school. And I don't know where that comes from, but it was like, when I'm on this team, I'm going to be one of the captains. And I've just always taken that role. And I think I took it when I became a manager to train the trainers. And it kind of falls into play with clients. You know, clients are like kind of my teammates, and it's kind of to build them up and get them excited and come at it with an approach that's different than when you think of your traditional trainer who's beating you up or yelling at you. I tell people, like, I'm here to coach you. I'm here to pick you up, coach you. And if anything, if I'm beating you up, you're not going to want to come to the gym. But if I can give you the tools that you need and coach you through this, when you're not ready to follow your menu, hey, come in and let's get at least a good workout. There's going to be that time where it flips and you're ready to listen and learn. And it's not about beating somebody up, trying to prove something, you know? Yeah. So,
well, you mentioned Grandpa Pager. So I knew him and your grandmother is, because it's through my wife, is aunt and uncle, Uncle Bob and Aunt Estelle. And they were the warmest people in that family to me, and I could sense the community that, you know, they had a gift in bringing people together.
Oh yeah.
And so I feel like it sometimes as family members, you sort of look around, and if that's not happening, maybe it's up to you to step up and lead. So I don't know if that's happening now in our family like that. It's happening. I have it like on my little side of the family, but not in the broader family, if that even exists.
My sister's actually done a really good job. Okay. Super, super proud of her. She's kind of filled that role. She reminds me of Grandma Pager. Yeah. She's
interesting. Yeah. That's cool. I'm glad that you have that. Cause what a great role. I think for all of these, like my kids even, and for me and for, you know, my in-laws and stuff, what a great example that we learned by going over. Were you living at that house at that time?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're living there at your grandparents' house.
Yep.
And, you know, we're going over there and kind of trampling on your, you know, I'm playing on your basketball court. We're over there playing basketball. I'm on your court. You're like, get these old men off my basketball court. And I'm probably in my 20s at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, it was just a great, they were definitely kind of, I say, the rock of the family. I mean, for sure. Yeah. You know, very rarely, I don't think I ever seen them fight, maybe once or twice, but just really just kind of set the tone, I think, for a lot of, like, you know, aunts and uncles to kind of see how their relationship should be. So,
all right, one more subject, and then I'll let you kind of close it out a little bit. You brought up as we were walking up the stairs into the studio here in my office, you brought up the Niners. You're a Niners fan. I'm a Niners fan. What do you think of those guys' chances right now? Is Purdy the real deal? Because he, to me, I love watching that dude.
I do too. I think he's a great story. I think his poise and just the way he's not up or he's not down. He's just boom, dialed in. Yeah. It's fun watching him. I think he's got some great stars. Yeah, I mean, my days of 49er fan go all the way back to Dwight Clark and Russ Francis and Joe Montana, Ronnie Lott. Used to go to Sierra and watch these guys practice over here. I think I was literally probably 10 or 11, and I wrote a letter to Joe Montana. He think he went through a separation or something like that. He was partner, he was rooming with Dwight Clark. And about a year later, I get a black and white picture sent from each of them, autographed and signed. I have in my office at the gym still to this day. So yeah, I've been fans of those guys for a long time. It's definitely fun and exciting to watch them. But yeah, Purdy's amazing.
Yeah, it is. A lot of history there. Okay, so what did I not ask you? Just, you know, closing thoughts? Anything I didn't ask you that we need to get out?
I don't know. Yeah. We got Kicks for Kids coming up. We're taking the shoes over on the 20th. This has grown, Kicks for Kids, over the last couple of years. So we do help a couple additional causes. Obviously, dear to my heart is the Children's Receiving Home. So they're kind of the first ones we work with. But my goal this year was to think big and outside the box. So I set a goal for 600 pairs of shoes this year.
Oh, wow.
And so about 2 years ago, we started working with HomeAid as well. And HomeAid is Foster Kids of Sacramento. And they also work with some of the children from Weave. And so we started taking over about 100 pairs of shoes to them. And I was like, man, I want to go big. I want to go big. So Mexicali is a mission trip that my home church, Bayside, goes to each and every year. And so I said, I don't get to go on that trip. Obviously, I'm working, but I want to raise 100 pair of shoes to take down to these guys. And then I ended up talking with Zach, and Zach Finley and his brother started a nonprofit called X Hope. And so Zach was telling me about a month ago, he goes, yeah, we got an event where my brother's building a school in Uganda next to this church. And we're basically auctioning off building classrooms. And so Zach had said, yeah, I purchased a classroom we're building. It's basically going to be in his name. Wow. And the history of it, he'll have his name up there, you know, for his legacy and family and stuff. I go, that's pretty cool. So then just thinking about that, I said, Zach, I said, what about sending some shoes to these kids? And he got fired up. He called his brother, said, hey, Jason's thinking of sending some shoes back. And boom, Kyle was on the phone with me right away. They sent me a video. This is just about 3 days ago that I posted, where they're actually at the little village of where the shoes are going to go, and showed the kids running around. And they said two-thirds of these kids don't even have shoes, and they'll walk 3 to 5 miles to church service on Sunday. So I said, dude, we're sending 100 pair of shoes there.
Oh my god!
So we're thinking big, outside the box. I would love to be able to say that SMB Elite and Kicks for Kids is international this year. So
talk about changing lives.
That's our goal.
Talk about helping people that need it, that deserve it. Yeah. Jason, I appreciate you coming in and being vulnerable on our show and sharing the stories. And it was, you know, personal to me because I already knew some of the stuff, but I didn't know it directly. Yeah. So really do appreciate it. And
thank you for having me.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Appreciate, you know, successful business people in our community, you know, when they're winning, they're giving back like you are. And, you know, so that generosity is all part of, building a successful business. And that's, you know, congratulations on that.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage. And of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.